Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Relationships Matter with Dr. Annie Abram. We will help you to understand your interactions with others so that you can create meaningful communications with the closest people in your life, as well as someone you meet fleetingly, such as a stranger on a bus. Join Dr. Annie Abram and expert guests for a deeper understanding of your relationships, how to make them better, and most importantly, how to make them matter. Please be advised that this show is not a substitute for psychotherapy. Tune in every Monday at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Here is your host, Dr. Annie Abram.
Hello, all you listeners, and thank you for joining me. Today, as our guest, we have Laura Jacobs, and she is a social advocate and psychotherapist. And she is an advocate for all those people who are discriminated against, marginalized, and otherwise not recognized for their self-identity. She, Laura, identifies herself as trans and genderqueer. She is a recognized leader in the advocacy for LGBTQ people. And she has any number of leadership positions in the community, including being on the board of the Trans Bodies, Trans Self organization, the International Journal of Transgenderism, LGBT Health Magazine, are just a few of the many. So welcome, Laura, and thank you so much for being our guest today.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm really glad to be here and educate your audience and hopefully not miseducate your audience, but I'll do my best. I think to say that I'm an advocate for all marginalized people may be a little bit too much, but I focus on LGBT issues and other forms of gender and sexual minority, and I especially focus on transgender issues.
Right. Well, let me tell you why I said that, because I think discrimination is discrimination, period.
Oh, yeah.
And marginalization is marginalization, period. So that's why I said that.
No problem.
Appreciate what you're saying.
Well, there are a lot of forms of marginalization and discrimination, which, you know, I can only deal with my portion of it. And there are a lot of other wonderful people out there dealing with other portions of it. And hopefully, through us all working together, we can change the world, which is, you know, a small little goal, but why not try for it?
It's very small. But on the other hand, we've come so far, right? And there's a lot of hope. And as you refer to in some of your writings, the adolescents are having a completely different experience than the generation before them in terms of exploring their bodies, exploring their identities, et cetera.
Not even the generation. Even five years ago, it was a different world for LGBT youth, especially the transgender part of that. For people 5 years ago, 10 years ago, it would have been unthinkable to come out, or at least very, very difficult to come out as transgender when you're a teenager, a youth. Certainly in my youth, it was unthinkable. And nowadays, we have adolescents coming out younger and younger and being supported by their schools and being supported by their families, and there are resources available and support groups, and they have other peers, and they can connect with people over Facebook and Instagram and everywhere else. And they have just grown up in a vastly different society than even was there 5 or 10 years ago when we talk about this this area of life.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it would be beyond wonderful if other areas of our life had progressed as much
as this particular area. Yeah, these kids are getting to explore their lives and explore their identities and think about who they are in ways that were not possible not that long ago. And they're really having a richer experience because they're able to look at themselves and think about these parts of life that our society doesn't really encourage us to be thinking about as much or hasn't historically. And
no,
so they're coming to a much deeper self-awareness and at a young age. And they're pretty damn sophisticated about it. When these kids talk, some of the youth that I work with, they really are sharp. You know, it amazes me. I don't remember being that smart when I was 15.
Well, I know that I wasn't. But so I think also the peer influence is tremendous. I mean, who is more influential on young people than their own peers? So
yeah,
I think that, you know, they, the people in the community that we're talking about, don't have the same kind of fear that we might have had or we did have growing up, you know, in talking about our personal identities, our stories, et cetera.
Well, because it was such a different world, we couldn't talk about them, you know? We were shunned for talking about them, at least in this kind of depth, you know?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So when they see their peers talking about it, it frees them up to talk about it. And they don't concern themselves with the kinds of rules and boundaries that people have had in the past. They think this is totally open conversation and discussion and should be part of the public conversation in a way that, you know, people in previous generations just, I don't know, we just sort of knew it wasn't okay to talk about these things. And these youth are, as youth always are, pushing the boundaries and reacting against past rules and structures that they don't believe in. And they're also, you know, reacting against the gender binary that we have. They're reacting against labels for sexuality. And they're really pushing the culture and the conversation forward.
So could you please answer my question? And that is,
sure.
What is gender?
What is gender? Well, that's a good question. You jumped right into the deep end of the pool there. What is gender? You know, when we think about gender, it's something that most of us have. There are some people who don't feel like they have a gender, but we're going to put that aside for now. So most of us feel like we have a gender, and it is this part of our identities that affects every interaction we have and affects very profoundly how we think of ourselves and the people we're connected to and the people in our lives. But it's also a part of our identity we haven't been encouraged to really explore. So when you start pulling apart what is gender, you get to, that leads you into a few different categories. That leads you into sort of what is gender when we talk about it biologically? What is gender when we talk about it in terms of social interaction? And what is gender when we think of it as an internal self-experience? So when we think of gender biologically, it gets a little murky. You know, we like to think that there are male and female brains, and they come in two varieties, and if you were to unscrew the top of somebody's head, you would see that the brain is either pink or blue in color, and if you just plop it on the table, you can tell which it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not exactly true. Brains don't come in pink or blue. The stereotypes we have about the biology of sex and gender are often just that, stereotypes. It is very, very, very difficult to tell the difference between a quote-unquote male brain and a quote-unquote female brain. And
when
there's
you
a
say
spectrum
very
between.
Difficult, is it impossible, as I would think?
I think it would be impossible for most people, and even neuroscientists say that, you know, it's incredibly, incredibly, incredibly difficult, and what differences that may exist are very subjective. It's not really clear if there are differences, if the differences are more on a spectrum. This is what I'm told by neuroscientists or friends I know who study this research more closely than I do, that it's virtually impossible to tell the difference, that there may be some differences, but it's not clear where they come from, what they mean, and even how profound the differences are. And basically that means that if you think of it as a spectrum, that it's not just, you know, male on one side, mm-hmm. and female on the other, there's a whole lot that's in the middle, and probably most of us fall somewhere in the middle, which makes it impossible to tell.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when we think of, so the idea that trans people have, you know, one brain and the other body, or that men have a certain brain and women have a certain brain, those ideas are pretty controversial, and a lot of that's not really proven. When we talk about gender,
it's really outdated, too. I mean, I feel that it's very outdated.
Well, I'm not concerned for myself as somebody trans or even, you know, with some of my clients. I'm not as concerned about whether it's a brain thing, whether my being trans is because of something in my brain. And yeah, it does fall back to outdated notions of gender and sexuality and binaries that are rigid and don't necessarily play out in the real world. Even if you could prove that I might have had, so I transitioned from male to female, and now I feel that I identify as genderqueer, meaning that I like to play with gender, and mm-hmm. I present in a way that's kind of ambiguous. You've seen my photos. At least I think you've seen my photos.
Yes,
you've seen my website.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I wear shirts and ties. I wear vests. I dress kind of masculine, even though I went from male to female. And so even if you could prove that I had a male brain or a female brain or a whatever brain, that doesn't tell me how to deal with my feelings. My feelings exist on a deeper, more internal, mm-hmm. personal level. And the biology may or may not sort of align with that. And I'm not sure it matters whether the biology aligns with that or whether the biology is even all that clear one way or the other. I think it's more important that we play with gender, that we try on gender, that we see how gender feels to us and see how we want to live our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Gender plays out in society in so many different ways. You know, we have gender roles, like people are supposed, you know, men are supposed to do this, women are supposed to do that, but even that's been falling apart lately. Gender roles around how we are supposed to dress, gender roles around who we're supposed to date, things like that. All those things have been falling by the wayside, and so the more you get under it.
May I just add something
here?
Yeah, please,
please. Please.
Something that's really important is that these gender restrictions, as they are, also apply to thinking and feeling, right? A man feels this way, a woman feels that way, and telling people who they are, basically, and how they're supposed to feel.
Yeah, well, we're subjected to those messages, like, from before birth, even.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the... You know, when a baby is born, you wrap them in a pink blanket or you wrap them in a blue blanket. You treat them in a certain way. There are studies that show that if you take a baby, and babies, you know, they look pretty gender neutral, right? You know, if you see a baby wrapped up in a blanket, you usually can't tell whether it's a boy or a girl, unless you sort of peek under the hood, so to speak. But if you take a baby and you wrap it in a blanket, and if you take that baby and you wrap it in a blue blanket and you know, ask people to interact with the baby, if the baby's wrapped in a blue blanket, they'll interact with the baby more physically.
Mm-hmm.
If they wrap the baby in a pink blanket, they'll use more emotional language and be talking to the baby in more emotional ways, regardless of the gender of the baby itself. There are
mm-hmm.
studies that have shown this.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so what that kind of says is that boys and girls, to some extent, are like trained differently from birth.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when we think that boys are a certain way and girls are a certain way, or that, you know, men are a certain way and women are a certain way, it's kind of hard to separate what's biology, what is the result of all that cultural training that goes on, all those messages we get. And so it's hard to tell what gender really is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's a very difficult word to understand. It's a very difficult concept, really, when you think about it in terms of its complexity.
Yeah.
That
we all think
no
we know
easy.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is one of the things that I learned as I was researching for this program. And that is that there are so many names, definitions, et cetera, that I am not familiar with. and, you know, I do consider myself a well-informed person, and I was frankly shocked to learn how much I don't know, which I think is probably true for many of my listeners. So I really appreciate it if you would go over certain names and words that we use to describe people in the LGBT community, and to help us understand what that means on a very emotional level, not a biological level.
Yeah. Are you asking about LGBT broadly, or are you asking about transgender issues specifically?
Let's break it down. Let's go to transgender, because it's easier to talk about something not so broad.
Sure. Well, when we're talking about transgender people, we use the word transgender people, or sometimes we say trans as a shorthand. We're really talking about people who feel or express a gender that isn't associated with the gender of their birth. Meaning, you know, when they popped out, they looked like a boy, and everybody assumed they were a boy. But as they've grown up, they feel internally maybe like a girl, or they dress in ways that are feminine, or they have changed their bodies to become female in terms of body parts. And so trans and transgender are really umbrella terms often for this entire community, and it can be expressed in a million different ways. So when I'm saying trans or transgender, I'm using it as broadly as possible to discuss this whole community. Now, within that, you have about a zillion different words that come up, and don't feel bad because I feel like I can't even keep track of them, and this is my bread and butter. This is what I do all day. And yet youth today are coming up with all sorts of new words to describe their genders. So we often hear words like, or phrases like male to female and female to male. That's pretty self-explanatory. It means that somebody who was what we call assigned male at birth or assigned female at birth, like popped out and everybody thought they were a boy or a girl, transitioned to the other. So M to F or male to female means somebody was assigned male at birth and transitioned to live as a woman, and vice versa. We hear trans masculine and trans feminine. And those also, to some extent, sound like what they are. They're talking about the gender somebody is going to, or the spectrum that they're on. Transmasculine means somebody is transitioning to male or in that general direction. Transfeminine is the other. You're always trying to be respectful. You're trying to use positive language, and you're trying to refer to people by the gender that matches their internal sense of self, which may not match how they dress or how they present or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. With me so far?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay, great. Now, we used to hear the word transsexual a lot, and that word is falling out of favor. There are some people who still use it, but a lot of people feel like it was a medicalized term that came from the medical community and really wasn't very considerate or sensitive to trans people. And it also suggested to some people that it was about sexuality and not about gender. People who are trans or in this community are talking about wanting to change their bodies, wanting to live in the world differently in a gender way, or are exploring gender. They're not necessarily talking about changing who they're sleeping with, who they're sexually attracted to.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why a lot of people prefer transgender and not transsexual.
Mm-hmm.
We also hear words like genderqueer, which I think I used before.
Mm-hmm.
And genderqueer means, it could mean two things. Now, just because people are changing their gender doesn't necessarily mean they're going from one end of the spectrum to the other end of the spectrum. You know, we historically thought of transness as somebody basically going from Ken to Barbie, or vice versa.
Right,
right. Extremes of gender and portraying a really classic expression of the gender that they're moving into. And we see this today with people like Caitlyn Jenner. You know, she's looking an awful lot like a Barbie doll. mm-hmm. and maybe sounding like a Barbie doll, but that's another story.
Right.
But nowadays we have so many people who are transitioning who don't feel that way about themselves and feel like they are somewhere in the middle, or that they're playing with gender in ways that don't match up to male, female, black and white binaries. And so a lot of those people use the term genderqueer. And genderqueer can also mean a deliberate, provocative playing with gender, you know,
mm-hmm.
Sort of queering gender, mm-hmm. throwing gender in people's faces. So those are some of the basic terms you hear, but you hear a lot of others. Even the word unicorn comes up a lot. And when you ask people on surveys to fill in their gender, enough say unicorn for it to be statistically significant, which is kind of surprising. Mm-hmm. But I don't always know what that means. But
I don't know what that means either. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's kind of fun, and it's interesting that people are creating words or using words like that to describe their genders.
Right, but I think what we're really talking about is, yes, gender and one's self-identification, but I think what we're really talking about is what goes on internally,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And that really defies description, and I think that's probably one of the most difficult things about, you know, referring to people as this or that, when the reality is, in my opinion, that we're all on the spectrum.
Yes, absolutely. And gender for all of us is a lot more complicated than Barbie and Ken. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, those are abstract stereotypes that virtually nobody lives up to, and I don't see why we should be limiting ourselves to them. You know, trans people grow up feeling this pain or discomfort or sensitivity around their bodies, not all of them, but so many of them do. And so they feel called to explore whatever that internal feeling is to try it on, to think about what gender means, and to also address some of that suffering that they are feeling inside. And so they're just trying to explore this part of identity. And the reason you see so many different terms is that gender is so nuanced for so many people. And
mm-hmm.
they're coming up with nuanced terms because the terms that are out there may or may not exactly fit how they feel. And so you see a lot of people like trying to define all those different points on the spectrums because that's where they feel. And, you know, trans people are often don't feel like this, like they fit into society in these ways. And it can be a source of great tension. And they're really just trying to, well, I'm a therapist, so I'm going to say that they're just trying to explore who they are like anybody else would be exploring who they are, and they're exploring this part of their identity, and it's really about what it means to them inside, you know, and in the context of their social environment, but really it's the internal that we're working with.
But I think that gets completely lost, you know, in the conversation, at least among people like myself who, you know, are not trans or transgender, genderqueer, whatever, right?
Yeah.
And I think it really gets lost in the conversation in terms of understanding what gender means. And it's not about genitalia, you know.
Yeah, you know, the stereotype, sorry, did I cut you off there? The stereotype is that, you know, trans people, once they correct this error, that it's an error, that it is an error of birth, that for some reason they were born in the wrong body, and once you fix that and you change the body and you and they start living in a different social role, everything gets better. But it's a lot more complicated than that. Being trans is not by any means all about what happens to your body. Obviously the body's a big part of it, and trans people agonize over those kinds of questions. But to look at trans people and the way we see a lot of the conversation playing out in public, it's about, well, trans people, they need to have these surgeries, they need to transition, they need to get their documents changed, and then that's it. Then that's all there really is for them, and they're fine. But No, it's a lot more complicated than just the physical changes.
No, I want to, I'm changing the subject a bit, but I want to ask
sure.
you about identification. So, for example,
mm-hmm.
I recently saw a YouTube video.
Mm-hmm.
And a woman was arrested in a hotel, checking into a hotel. A trans woman was arrested checking into a hotel. And
yeah.
Because she didn't have the same identification on her driver's license as elsewhere. So
mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, is there any movement to get driver's license changed, or is that something
mm-hmm.
that's very difficult to do?
It really depends a great deal on where you live.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm here in New York, and here it's not that difficult at all. And I also work in New York and New Jersey, and in New Jersey it's not that difficult either.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of places, it's not even possible or certainly very, very difficult. So it really depends on the culture of the place
of
where
the
a person
state,
is from.
Yeah,
the states.
Mm-hmm.
And we're certainly seeing a lot of states basically try to legislate trans people out of existence by making it impossible for trans people to have appropriate documents and to have safety in public, whether it's documents or otherwise. And there are some places where you can...
Or even to find a place to go to the bathroom. I know that. Right?
Yeah,
I mean,
well, absolutely, right? I mean, we have some states like, what was it, North Carolina, I think it was
Mississippi.
Minnesota? Mississippi, rather. That are making it, that are criminalizing trans people for going to the bathroom. Now, you know, if you were to see somebody like Caitlyn Jenner in these states, she would have to use the men's room,
mm-hmm.
which would put her at far more risk than anybody else in the restroom. These, you know, these states are saying, well, we have to keep it safe for other people, for, you know, for our women and children. But there are literally zero recorded incidents of somebody trans going into a bathroom and victimizing somebody else. And there are countless incidents of trans people being victimized for being forced into a bathroom that's, you know, inappropriate.
And then we have congressional leaders playing footsie in the bathroom.
Well, you know, there's this meme that has been going around, and it's true that more people from the U.S. Congress have been arrested for inappropriate behavior in public bathrooms than trans people have been arrested for inappropriate behavior. So maybe we should, you know, be limiting Congress people from using the restrooms because they have
right.
They're far more risky than trans people.
Right.
Apparently, statistically.
Well, absolutely.
So,
we can start the movement.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. It is so complicated. Life is so complicated. But I think that, you know, bottom line, that this really is a movement to be who you are, to be authentic, and to have that be okay. And to, you know, feel that whatever your quote-unquote gender expression is acceptable. And, you know, your internal expression is acceptable. I think that we're a long way from that, but that's certainly, I think, one of the primary goals.
Yeah, well, I think we're moving in that direction. It's still taking time, and it's never moving as fast as some of us would like. But, you know, we're moving to a place where we just, as a species, understand gender with a lot more complexity than we used to. And we're seeing people express that complexity. And sooner or later, these kinds of discussions and these questions about binaries and bathrooms and whatnot will seem beyond passé. But we're in the interim awkward period where it's transitional. And you're seeing some people react negatively to that transition. And you're seeing some people really try to push it forward.
You know, Laura, we have a couple of call-ins, and
okay.
we don't have time for all of them, but here I will read you one.
I'm
the father of a 4-year-old boy who has always liked girls' things. Last week, he told me, I wish I'd been born a girl.
Mm-hmm.
I'm scared about his future. How can I help him?
Okay, so I don't know where the caller was located. But the best thing to do would be to try and find a good therapist who's experienced in transgender children. There are a number certainly in some of the major areas like New York and San Francisco and a lot of other places. I would also encourage the person to look at the books by a woman named Diane Ehrensaft, E-H-E-R-E-N-S-A-F-T, something like that. She has some great books on gender nonconforming youth, which are really wonderful. And I think the most important thing you can do as a parent of a kid in that situation is give the kid freedom to explore. And just let the kid try on different things, act different ways, and try and protect them from any sort of judgment or negativity or whatnot, because studies really clearly are starting to show that these kids, when they are raised in environments that are accepting and supporting, they don't have any higher rates of anxiety, depression, things like that, than kids who are not trans. But
or
if these
suicide,
kids,
which is a big
or
problem,
suicide,
right?
Yeah, suicide rates are really high in this population. Some say as high as 41% have attempted suicide. But if these kids grow up in situations where they're not supported, where the parents are trying to push them one way or the other, or the schools are trying to push them one way or the other, that's when you see the suicidality, the high rates of depression and anxiety, and they don't do well in school and so on. So I guess to the father who called in, I would just say try and create a safe and loving environment for your child to explore their gender. And if you do that, chances are they'll figure it out and they'll be okay, and hopefully you can find some good help.
Thank you. Thank you, Laura, for coming on the show today. You are a wealth of knowledge, information, and it's been such an education, as I hope it's been for our listeners. So
thanks
again.
I really appreciate it. Let me just throw out my website, which is www.lauraajacobs.com. Make sure there's that extra A in the middle, because there are plenty of Laura Jacobs out there. And
spell your last name.
J-A-C-O-B-S.
Okay. So it's lauraajacobs.com.
Yep, with an S on the end, yep. And okay. I'm happy to, people can find information about me and my email and everything else right there.
Okay, great. I'm so glad you thought to share that. So I hope to be in touch, and thanks so much again.
Feel free, and I'm happy to come back some other time.
Great.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.